Tomorrow is Thanksgiving Day. Are you feeling thankful yet? Or are you too stressed out by the cares of this world? I'm Rob West. This is always a great time of year to count our blessings and give thanks. But sometimes fear and anxiety can get in the way, especially over money. We'll talk about how you can find contentment today. Then we have lots of great listener questions ahead, but we won't be taking your live calls today because this program is pre-recorded. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Do you ever find yourself in the one-day mindset, believing that one day I'll be out of debt, one day I'll have enough money, one day I'll be able to stop worrying about my investments, or one day I'll finally be able to relax? We yearn for contentment, hoping to find it someday. But is it possible to experience contentment in every moment of every day? Well, according to the Apostle Paul, it is indeed possible. Our mistake lies in seeking contentment in the wrong places. When our contentment depends on our circumstances, it will always be temporary because circumstances constantly change. During his lifetime, the Apostle Paul went from worldly success to the depths of poverty. He had been a well-respected Pharisee, but became an imprisoned and impoverished follower of Christ. Despite all this, Paul writes in Philippians 4 that he had discovered the secret to contentment. It was not in his circumstances, but in the person and work of Jesus. He writes from verses 11 through 13, "Not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low. I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me." Paul experienced both plenty and want, and neither affected him because his contentment was based on something far beyond this world, his relationship with Christ. Does this ability come naturally, suddenly appearing the day you pray the sinner's prayer and accept Christ as Lord and Savior? Well, that would be wonderful, but Paul stresses that contentment is a learned behavior. You have to work at it. When we take our eyes off our circumstances and place them on God, as Paul did, it changes our perspective. We begin to see that nothing in this world, not money, success, status, people, possessions, or even a booming economy, will ever bring lasting contentment. Only a deep personal relationship with Jesus can offer what our souls long for. Hebrews 13:5 encourages us to keep your life free from the love of money and be content with what you have, for he has said, "I will never leave you nor forsake you." Now, this is Thanksgiving week, so we don't want to forget about the crucial role of thankfulness in the pursuit of contentment. When you recognize what God has already done for you, the incredible provision and blessings he's given you, you begin to form a heart of gratitude. Like my friend Dr. Art Rayner likes to say, when you realize that you're entitled to nothing, you become thankful for everything. If you're finding it hard to feel content in your current situation, practicing gratitude intentionally can help break through that negative mindset. It redirects your focus from what's missing to what you already have, reminding you of God's sovereignty and goodness. He has promised to provide, and he is always faithful to his promises. If you're not feeling particularly thankful or content today, here are 5 practical steps to help improve your perspective. First, make gratitude a daily habit. Begin each day by listing 3 things you're grateful for. This simple practice shifts your focus from what you lack to what you already have. Second, bring your needs to God. Share your needs, not wants, with God, approaching him with a heart of thankfulness. Acknowledge all he's given you and trust him to continue providing for you in the future. Find contentment in Christ. True contentment is found in Christ alone. Reflect on Philippians 4:11 through 13, reminding yourself daily that Christ is sufficient for every need. Appreciate the present. Take a moment to savor the blessings around you. Stop striving for more. Take a deep breath and find joy in what you have right now. And finally, practice generosity. Generosity puts gratitude into action and fosters contentment. Giving to others reminds us of our own abundance and the joy of sharing those blessings. If you're struggling with financial fear and anxiety this season or know someone who is, I encourage you to get a copy of our 21-day devotional, Look at the Sparrows. It offers guidance and strength to help you find peace and contentment no matter the circumstances. You can receive a copy by visiting faithfi.com/give and making a gift of $25 or more. That's faithfi.com/give. We'll be right back. I'm so thankful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. You know, here at AFR, it's all about equipping you with a biblical worldview. First and foremost, to encourage you to surrender your lives to Jesus, to place your full trust in Him for your salvation. And then beyond that, which is the biggest decision you will ever make, it's all about stewardship. How can we be stewards of what God has entrusted to us? Our time, our relationships, we're stewards of God's Word and our talents and skills, and yes, His resources, the financial resources that have been entrusted to us. How do we live with a biblical worldview in every area of our lives, including this area of money, understanding the heart of God from Scripture and applying that to the everyday decisions we make with His money? That's what we want to do on this program, to help you do just that. In the news today, retailers are chomping at the bit for this year's holiday spending spree from November 1st to December 31st could reach, you ready for this, $990 billion with a B, according to National Retail Federation. Despite credit card debt now at a record $1.14 trillion, shoppers this year expect to spend on average nearly $1,800 during the Christmas season. That's an 8% increase over last year. That's according to Deloitte's Holiday Retail Survey. And if you can believe it, a NerdWallet report is showing that almost 30% of Christmas shoppers still haven't paid off last year's holiday purchases. Well, all of this just shows how critical it is to have a Christmas budget, know exactly how much you can spend without having to use credit. And I was just talking earlier this week with our good friend Crystal Payne of MoneySavingMom.com, and she was reminding us that it's a good idea to use cash for Christmas spending. If you want to do online shopping, just get one of those prepaid cards or perhaps an Amazon gift card, and then you can use that to make sure you don't go over budget. Also, she suggested considering picking up some additional hours or maybe even a part-time job. The key is to make sure you don't hit January with bills you didn't expect. Also, just be thoughtful about how you want to use that time to keep Jesus at the center. So perhaps an Advent calendar or devotional that you can use, but also thinking about what experiences you want to create. One of the recommendations Crystal makes is to let each family member submit one idea for their Christmas bucket list and then put all of those on the calendar so everybody gets a voice into what we're doing. But, you know, perhaps somebody wants to do Christmas lights and another a Christmas movie and yet another Christmas cookie decorating. Let everybody speak into that, pick one item, and then get that on the calendar to make sure that you do it. So hopefully those are some helpful thoughts. Hard to believe that Christmas is just around the corner, and yet it's absolutely true. Let's begin in Birmingham, Alabama. Hi, Chuck. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi. I have a question about how to use trusts to protect assets like real estate or any other assets from things like, nursing home, in case I can't qualify for long-term care insurance, or, you know, potential divorce from my, kids and their siblings, you know, in the future. How can I use I've heard different things about different types of trusts. Revocable, irrevocable, things like that, yeah. And especially irrevocable, because I don't know how to, once you put something in that's permanent like that, you know, there's this fear, I don't know how to get that back out. How do you use one of those so that, you know, you don't lose it forever?
Yeah. It's a great question, Chuck, and I would just say at the start of my answer, and then I'll give you some general thoughts, this is something you should connect with an attorney on who is an estate planning attorney and can help you with these things. An elder care attorney would be someone who specializes in these types of things. But essentially, it would involve, in most cases, an irrevocable trust to protect your assets. Now, there is still going to be that look back period, but as long as you get past that, that would protect your assets from, you know, Medicaid recovery and, you know, nursing home costs, that type of thing. But keep in mind, that is irrevocable, meaning you cannot take it back. You actually are relinquishing ownership. And then beyond that, you'd have to consider just even your own convictions and ethics around that, just in terms of if you have the assets that are available to pay for those expenses, are you comfortable relying on government assistance if they're shielded from government access just based on this type of irrevocable trust? But, you know, you are going to have to give up control in an irrevocable trust, and it's not reversible without a whole lot of work and the court's involvement. So beyond that, I would, you know, visit with both a financial advisor to do the planning side and think about how do you accumulate the assets you need to provide for yourself in that season of time. And maybe long-term care insurance would be a great resource for you. But then secondly, on the estate planning side, not only to make sure that you have the right, you know, instruments in place for an effective wealth transfer strategy, but also that you have things like, you know, powers of attorney for both financial and legal matters, which would be a durable power of attorney, as well as for healthcare matters, which would be a healthcare surrogate or a healthcare power of attorney. So those need to be in place, and then you could consider at the same time a living will. But an elder care attorney would be able to give you the specifics, especially as it relates to your state, because it does vary by state. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, especially by a state.
Yeah, yeah, very good. So I'd just reach out. If you don't have one, you could contact a certified Kingdom advisor there in Birmingham and ask for a referral. You'll do that on our website, faithfi.com. That's faithfi.com. Just click find a professional. Thanks for your call, sir. Let's go to North Carolina. Hi, Becky. Thanks for calling. Were you affected at all by the storms?
No, I was not. Praise the Lord.
Yeah, I know the state of North Carolina has been through it. You all have been in our prayers, but how can I help you today?
So here's my question. I am going to need to buy a house at some point. And I'm thinking within the next year, but I'm not sure. I have $70,000 that I'm wanting to use for my down payment, but I've would like to turn that $70,000 into a much larger down payment, but I really don't know what to do with the money. I just a few months ago put it in a high interest savings account, and that's all I've done with this money. It was just sitting in my personal account, not drawing anything. Is there something smarter I could be doing with this money, but still be able to get access to it as soon as I find the right house and the right rate?
There really isn't, Becky. That's the best option. I mean, right now you're going to find that most high yield savings accounts are offering around 4%. You will find still a few higher, between 4.5% and even as much as 5%. They are out there with some of the online banks. Most of them are settling in around 4 right now, just as interest rates head down. That's going to be the best option. You know, on $70,000, that's still going to throw off a meaningful amount of somewhere between, you know, $2,800 and $3,500 over the year. But you want safety when we're talking about an unknown time horizon. You also want liquidity. You're not going to find that anywhere else. This is not money that should be invested. You don't want to lock it up in a CD because then you're going to have penalties. So the high yield savings account is really the best option. It's going to add $2,000 or $3,000 over the next 12 months. I know that's not a ton of money, but still meaningful and gives you the safety and liquidity you're looking for. Hope that helps. You can find the best offer at bankrate.com or joinchristiancommunity.com. If you want a banking partner that's aligned with your Christian values, that's Christian Community Credit Union. joinchristiancommunity.com. Now, just a quick reminder as we head into this next break, don't call in. Our team is not here today, but we have some great questions we've lined up in advance. Those will be coming just on the other side of this break. A quick reminder, if you'd like to support our work, you can do that on our website, faithfi.com. Just click give. More to come on Faith and Finance right after this. We'll be right back. Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. Just a quick reminder, we're not here today, so don't call in, but we lined up some great questions in advance. We'll get to those in just a moment. First, Judy called in. She was not able to hold, but we did get her question, so I want to go ahead and I'll read that question and then give my thoughts. She says, I'm 83 years old. My house is worth a little over $170,000. If I did a reverse mortgage, wouldn't the outstanding balance owed grow a lot? And how much could I borrow? Also, how many years would it take my kids to pay it off? And finally, do I have to pay a balance of $39,000, which is the balance on the mortgage? So, yeah, let me tackle this. So we've got a home worth $170,000. Generally, you can get somewhere between 35 and 50% of the mortgage balance. That's depending on your age. And so you'd want to get a specific illustration, Judy, for this. But let's just assume at 83, you could get the full 50%. And I think that's very possible. So that would mean that all of a sudden now your balance on the mortgage is $85,000, not $39,000. The first thing that will be done when you get the reverse mortgage is pay off the $39,000, because that existing mortgage has to be paid. So the $39,000 gets paid and you'd have essentially $46,000 left. And most folks would turn that into a line of credit where you can access it when you need it and if you need it, but you don't have to touch it. And you'd never have a mortgage payment. So your new balance would be 85 after the 39 was paid off. You'd have an $85,000 reverse mortgage and you'd have access to up to 46,000. And if you didn't touch it, that 46,000 would increase over time as you age and as the value of the home increases in value, which most homes do just about every year. And certainly that's been true, in the recent history. The other option you would have, instead of taking that $46,000 as a line of credit, you could also convert that into an income stream for life. So they'd send you a monthly check for the rest of your life as long as you live. And then once you pass away or if you sell the home, the reverse mortgage would have to be paid. Now, you asked, isn't the balance going to grow? Yes, it is, because there's both an interest rate and fees. And that interest rate's going to be probably just a little bit higher than whatever that prevailing rate is, but it's variable. So as the interest rates come down, which they're doing right now, your reverse mortgage rate would come down, but it would be very close to maybe a little higher than whatever the current mortgage rates are, which right now are sitting at around 6%. So the balance, if you didn't pay anything on it, and you're certainly not obligated to, you have no mortgage payment with a reverse mortgage, even though you're able to pay it at any time if you want to, because you're not making a payment, that balance would be growing each year based on whatever that interest rate is, plus fees. Now, one of the things you'd be assured of with a HECM, a home equity conversion mortgage, which is the type of reverse mortgages that are done today, is that that balance would never grow to be more than the value of your home. So if for some reason your home declined in value and you lived a really long time to 105 and they're paying you a monthly income stream and they end up paying you out more than your home is worth, the federal government would step in and make sure that your estate at your passing never owes more than the value of your home. But it could grow to equal the value of your home, meaning there would be nothing left over. What would likely happen is if you took that $85,000 and the $46,000 in the line of credit and you used all of that, that based on the appreciation of the house and that balance increasing over time with interest and fees, there would probably still be quite a bit of equity available so that at your death, that reverse mortgage could be paid off. And then the rest would be available for your heirs, for your kids. Now, if your kids wanted to keep the house, they would need to take whatever that balance is at your death on the reverse mortgage, and they would have to refinance the home with a conventional mortgage, pay off the reverse mortgage, and then start making payments on the house at whatever amortization they get, 20 years, 30 years, typical mortgage. So hopefully that helps you. I know there's a lot there. If you want to learn more, you could connect with our friends at Movement Mortgage, movement.com/faith. Thank you for calling. Let's go to New Hampshire. Barbara, go ahead.
Hey, Rob. Bob. I was wondering, do you have any feelings, you know, nay or yay towards annuities? Are they something to stay away from, or are there some that are okay to get involved with?
Yeah. So here's my take on it, and I wish I could give you a definitive yes or no. I'm not going to do that. I will say they're not my first choice, and they're definitely not my most recommended, but I will say they do have a place. Now, why are they not my first choice? Why do I not advocate for them? Number one, they're complicated. So, you know, there's all kinds of annuities, and, you know, often the fine print is very detailed, and you really have to understand what you're buying. Number two, you're giving up something in order to get the downside protection. So the primary feature, if you will, of an annuity is it protects your money on the downside. So if you have a guaranteed fixed annuity, well, you're going to get a guaranteed rate of return, you know, every year. If you have a variable annuity where you get some upside of the market, they're going to promise that it never goes below the value that you started with. So you're not going to lose any money. But in order to get that protection, you've got to give up some upside potential. So what makes the stock market effective over the long haul is when you add in those years where the market happens to be up dramatically, kind of like this year, it's those years that make those average annual returns as appealing as they are. You know, you might have heard the 9%, the S&P 500 has averaged more than 9% a year over the last 75 years. Well, in part, the way you get there is you get those dramatic up years that really help to give those average annual returns what they are. Well, with a variable annuity, you don't get that. You only get a certain portion of the upside, and then the annuity company takes everything over a certain amount and they keep it. That's how they pay for that downside protection. So they're complicated. You got to give up upside potential and you lose access to your money. So you're going to have surrender charges if you need to get it back. Whereas if you're invested in stocks and bonds, you can get to it at any time if you have to. So those are my thoughts. We'll take a quick break and be right back. Well, it's great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance. By the way, if you've not checked out our website recently, we'd love for you to do that. The wealth of content, articles, podcasts, and videos there to help you be a wise and faithful steward of God's money is incredible. You'll find it all at faithfi.com. You can visit that on your smartphone or on your desktop. Again, faithfi.com. Just click the content button. Again, it's all at faithfi.com. All right, let's head back to the phones. To Indiana we go. And Greg, you're up next. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I have got a stepson that's incarcerated and will be for at least 10 years or more probably. And he won it was like a settlement that they had. And so he sent us $9,000 that he wants us to do something with. I just want to know what the best thing I should do with it is. And we do have a financial advisor that my wife and I have our money in. But I know $9,000 isn't a large sum of money, but I want to make sure he has access to it. And I'm 70, so, you know, I might not even be alive when he gets out. But so I want to make sure he has access to it. And then what is the best return that he would get in like a 10-year period?
Yeah. Interesting. So the time horizon is 10 years. The amount is $9,000. And are you willing to take some risk with it? Like if it lost value between now and the end of the 10 years, would that be concerning to you?
It might be concerning to him. I really don't know for sure if he's willing to risk that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not suggesting we throw it all in Tesla or anything, but what I'm saying is anytime we're investing in stocks and bonds, you know, there is the risk of loss. And so could it be down? Absolutely. Which means it could dip below 9,000. So I think that's one of the keys. I mean, you've defined the amount, you've defined the time horizon. As long as you've got at least 10 years, five at a minimum, but I really like 10, I think stocks and bonds should be considered, but there is the potential for loss. And so if you want something that really is secure, you'd either need to do maybe a 10-year bond, and that would be guaranteed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. You'd probably get around 4% a year, and you'd be guaranteed that at the end of the 10 years that you get your money back plus interest. So that could be an option. The other option is probably an annuity, I guess. But, you know, there you are going to have some lockup periods, but it sounds like that's okay. The goal would just be, where do I get the best guaranteed rate of return? High yield savings is going to be coming down with interest rates. CDs, the best you're going to get right now for a pretty attractive return is about 3 years, and then you're probably going to have to roll it over at a lower rate. So the way you'd get a better rate of return with as much safety as possible over a decade without taking any risk would probably be a 10-year treasury bond or an annuity.
Okay. And I already have a treasury direct account, so I mean, I would assume I would need to set that up for him, but and there wouldn't be any problem for him having access to that or anything when he would get out.
No, you could make him the beneficiary. Are you able to set it up in his name?
I don't know why not.
Yeah. So you could just go ahead and open it in his name. I mean, a U.S. T-bond right now is paying just over 4% a year, and you could hold to maturity.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, I appreciate
Yeah, you're welcome. We appreciate your call. All the best to you, and call anytime. Let's go to Kansas. Hi, Kathy. How can I help?
Hi, Rob. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a 75-year-old widow of about 10 years. We have three daughters, and I own the home and my car, and I have an IRA with a Kingdom advisor, and have about $105,000 there, and I have about $55,000 in stocks with Wells Fargo, and I just wanted to make sure I have a deed on death for the house to go to the three daughters, and then I have them listed as transfer on death on the car, and then as beneficiaries on the IRA and the stock. I just wondered, is there anything else I should be doing to protect giving them what I have when I pass?
Well, Kathy, you're doing a fabulous job. I'm really impressed, and I'm grateful that you shared all that background. Well done. I think the only other thing that I haven't heard is just making sure you have a good handle on your spending, that you've got an emergency fund, that you have a will to kind of catch everything else that's not covered by a TOD or a beneficiary, like your personal effects and you know, furniture and that kind of thing. And then making sure you have, everything where the girls or your kids know where to get it. So they know how to access the accounts and they've got copies of the, IRAs and they know who the advisor is all in one place. And then you also want to make sure you have a healthcare surrogate and a durable power of attorney if you're incapacitated so they can make financial, legal, and medical decisions for you. And then finally, a living will so you can make end-of-life decisions and then maybe some funeral planning. But apart from that, it sounds like you're in really great shape.
That's good. We have our will is long time ago, which we made just so that when our girls were little, that they would go to who they would go to if we passed the two of us. So sure. I really don't have anything else. The household items and stuff, can't they just be distributed without any will or anything like that?
Well, it'd probably be good just to update that will. I mean, you want the executor to make that decision. And it's just nice if it's clear who gets what, and that way they're not having to decide after the fact. So I think, that might be something to think about. But apart from that, I think you're in really good shape. I'm going to send you two things that I think will be a blessing to you, just as our gift to you. One will be a book called Wise Women Managing Money. It's by our friend Miriam Neff. When her husband passed away, she wrote this book for widows, specifically around money management, just to be a blessing and an encouragement to folks in her situation and yours. And then secondly is a resource from our friends at Compass, and it's called Setting Your House in Order, and it'll give you a template to think about just how you communicate with your kids. If you haven't thought about everything, it'll give you kind of a running list of everything you need to consider. Is that helpful?
Well, that's great. Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. We'll get that in the mail to you, Kathy. You stay on the line. We'll get your information, and we'll send that right out to you. Setting Your House in Order and Wise Women Managing Money.
Appreciate it.
All right. God bless you. Thanks for calling today. Well, folks, we're going to take another break here in just a second. I had the opportunity to speak earlier today, and just to share some observations I have here at having hosted this program now for more than 5 years. And you know what? One of the big takeaways that I have is just that what a privilege it is to manage God's money. And together, you know, we all just want to be found faithful. We want to honor the Lord with what we have. And the best way to do that is really just to understand the heart of God, which means we need to be in relationship with Him. We need to be in His Word. And boy, He's got so much to say on this topic of money and money management. It has nothing to do with what He wants from us. He doesn't need anything from us. He owns it all. It's because of what He wants for us. He doesn't want money to compete with our hearts. He wants us to be in a thriving relationship with Him where He's our ultimate treasure, and so we can bring Him glory and enjoy His creation, including money. What a great opportunity. We'll be right back. I'm grateful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. Sit back and enjoy. We're going to cover a lot of ground here in our final segment. We'll get to as many calls as we can. Let's go to Oklahoma. Hi, Sam. How can I help?
Yes, I'm 38 years old, and I have a 401k, and I would like to try to retire at 55 years old. So if I work 20 years with my current company, do you think that that's a feasible goal, or do you think I need to work longer?
Well, it all depends upon how much you have in there right now and what it could grow to and how much you're going to need in retirement. In terms of income from this 401k alongside whatever other income sources you'll have, like Social Security or anything else. So what do you have in that 401k right now?
I'm not 100% sure. I mean, I've had a 401k since I was 16, and I always rolled it over to every job that I've had. So I'm not 100% sure what I have in there, but since I was 16, I've had one.
All right. What would you guess is in there?
As of right now, I don't know, 400,000 maybe.
Okay, let's say 400,000. And how much are you adding a year, do you know?
My company matches 5%, but I put in at least 10% of my check every week. So,
okay.
So today, I make about $3,000 a week, so I put in about $300. And
all
they
right.
Match up to 5%.
Okay. So if you're putting in 10, they're matching 5, so that's 450 a week. Is that right?
Yeah.
So that's another 23,000 or so a year. So let's say you've got 400,000, you're adding 23,000 a year. You know, that for 20 years at, let's just say 7%, let's say pretty conservative, you know, that would be about $2.5 million. If you have 400,000 today and you add 23,000 a year, at 7% rate of return for 20 years, that'd be about $2.5 million. So if let's say it grew to $2.5 million, you know, I'd be comfortable with you pulling 100,000 a year and really over time, probably never seeing that principal balance decline. And that would be on top of Social Security, you know, which could throw as much as, you know, $2,000, $2,500 a month, you know, and it's going to grow with inflation. What are you living on today? How much, roughly?
I make $7,000 to $10,000 a month, and because I drive a truck for a living. So
yeah,
I live in my truck. So I don't really spend too much money.
Yeah. All right. Well, it sounds like to me you're living modestly. If in fact you have a good $400,000 saved, and if in fact you're putting, you know, somewhere between $20,000 and $23,000 a year, you're probably going to find that you're on track to over accumulate. So it may be worth you sitting with an advisor to define a finish line and just say, how much is enough? How much do I really need to accumulate? Could be that you could back off what you're putting in now and accelerate your giving, or maybe you want to reach your goal quicker, whatever that goal is, and then you cap your lifestyle and your savings. But however you go about that, it sounds like you're on a great path to having all that you need and then some.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you feel like in retirement you could live on $100,000, the equivalent of $100,000 a year plus Social Security, if you just continue doing what you're doing, you're probably, you know, going to be able to do that without any trouble. So, hey, keep up the good work, Sam. If we can help you further, don't hesitate to call. And if you want to connect with an advisor to do some retirement planning, just go to our website, faithfi.com, click Find a Professional, and you can visit with a CKA there in Oklahoma or perhaps somewhere on your route. Hey, thanks for being on the program. Let's go to Indiana, WGNR. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi, Rob. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I was going to ask about two different kinds of annuities, but I heard you talk about them earlier and you don't really like them. What my husband and I are looking for, we're 3 years from retirement, house paid for. We've got about $700,000 in stocks and ETFs and things like that, and plus some other smaller funds and reserve funds. I mean, so we're doing great. What we'd like to do is take about $100,000, is what we're thinking about, to put it into a more protective kind of product to get a little bit more balanced portfolio, especially as we enter retirement, a little less risk on our plate. So, that's why we were thinking about either we have two different advisors we work with, but one recommended a variable annuity, but my husband doesn't like the fees. They're pretty steep. And then the other one recommended a structured annuity, and then I was looking myself at a fixed indexed annuity. But just trying to figure out what would be a more conservative, protective type of thing to do with some of our portfolio.
Yeah, got it. I mean, you've got a number of options. I mean, so I think one option is you have your current advisor take whatever that portion is that you're wanting to get more conservative with and move it into fixed income type investments. Even though the price of these, let's say, bonds, whether they're corporate or government, even though they can move around, you know, you can lock in that yield. And if you buy individual bonds and not just a mutual fund, you can hold them to maturity and you're always going to get your face value back plus whatever the coupon is, the yield. So that's one option. And that's going to, even though there's risk there, it's going to be lower risk, but you still have access to the money and you don't have quite as much in the way of fees. The other option is, you know, CDs, but those aren't terribly attractive and they're, because you could, even though you get a good, nice grade today, you could probably only lock it in for 3 years. So that's where annuities, I think, can be an option. If you really are looking for safety, then, you know, that's a way to go. And there are plenty of flavors of annuity. You can do the variable. You can do the fixed. You can even do the structured, which gets a little bit more complicated with structured annuities. But they all are going to share this idea of upside potential with downside protection. Well, what are you giving up to get that downside protection? You're giving up complexity because they are complicated. You're giving up fees, which your husband pointed out. They tend to be somewhat expensive. And you're giving up the upside potential. But if you're okay with that, then an annuity is a way to get a better than average rate of return with that downside protection. And that may mean that this is the very best option for you. And so I would just get each of your advisors to recommend what they think is the very best product for you and evaluate them, and you and your husband decide which one you think is the best fit. I'm not anti-annuity. I just want to make sure you understand why you're getting an annuity. And if your ultimate objective is better than average return, downside protection, the annuity is probably the best way to do that.
Okay. Okay, very good. Thank you so much. That was very helpful.
Ma'am.
Yes.
You're very welcome, Chris. Lord bless you. Let's go to Sherry in Wisconsin. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just wondering about an irrevocable trust. I have an irrevocable trust that is about 20 years old, and there is some changes that I need made. To be quite frank, have someone's name taken out of it. How is that possible, or how do I do that?
And it is an irrevocable trust, not a revocable trust. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
I mean, it's not easy. So you, and I'm not an attorney, so you're going to want to go talk to an attorney who can look at your specific trust and the situation. The whole purpose of an irrevocable trust is it's designed to be unchanged once it's established. However, there's always a however, under certain conditions, it may be possible to either modify it or terminate it. In your case, you want to modify it. It depends on the laws of your state, the terms of the trust, and the circumstances. Some irrevocable trusts have built-in provisions that would be called a trustee's power of modification or a protector clause, and that allows certain modifications if specific conditions are met. You just have to see whether your trust has that. In some cases, the trust protector is a third party that's designated to amend it or make changes. In some cases, with unanimous consent of the beneficiaries, they may allow changes, although if you're removing somebody, you're probably not going to be able to get unanimous consent. In other cases, a court approval may be required in addition to beneficiary consent. You can work through the court and, try to get them to change it if the trust's purpose has become impossible or impractical to achieve. Those would be the types of things. So the first step is always to review the trust documents, see if there's any provisions that allow for modification. The second would be to consult a trust attorney who could look it over. And then, if necessary, you would petition the court.
Okay. And so if it was possible that it was modified, does that then change the date on it? Or does the date stay the same and just the modification is changed?
Yeah, again, I'm not an attorney, so I don't want to give legal advice. But, generally speaking, my understanding is you would have the original trust date intact, but then you'd have a modification date. So you'd essentially have two dates.
All right. But well, that answers my question.
All right. But I think it's always good to get legal advice here. So I think your next step, other than just kind of pulling it out and seeing what you can see in the trust docs, is to go visit with that attorney who can look it over in light of your state, in light of your trust, tell you exactly what you need to know about dates and modifications and all the rest of it. So thank you for calling, though, Sherry. Lord bless you. Hey, if you need an estate attorney, you could get a referral from a CKA at our website, faithfi.com. So with that, let me say thanks. Thankful for Sandy and Taylor and Devin and everybody here at FaithFi. Certainly couldn't do this without them and without each of you listening and calling. So thanks for being a part of the broadcast today. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.